recording. All right. We're recording. Wonderful. Thank you so much for being here tonight. It is just an honor to always to be able to share what I've learned over the last however many years. Now, I don't even want to say that many years, but you know, the Lord tells us that as we get older, we grow in wisdom, and we do. And so it's my job to teach other people. When I was a little girl, I always knew I wanted to be a teacher. So now I'm not only a teacher of students here at FBA, but I'm a teacher of teachers as well through the National Institute for Learning Development, which is just teaching teachers how to teach more effectively. So you are very special people. You are called to work with children, and they're precious in His sight, right? And so they can also be challenging sometimes, too, because you get to have them for about, what, an hour every Sunday. And so, but the one thing that we want to do, and the one thing we want to do tonight, is that we want to help children not only learn God's word more effectively, but also to be able to remember it and apply it. And so that's what we're going to be doing tonight, and exploring ways of helping them to learn better. And then you will go out of here having some activities that you can work with them next Sunday or the next Sunday and all of that. Okay, the next one. God designed an amazing brain, didn't He? There in August of 2007, which has been several years ago, the Discover magazine had an article entitled 10 Unsolved Mysteries of the Brain. Do you suppose now with all the research they might be less than 10 unsolved? I don't know. God designed this, so there's going to always be a mystery about some of His designs. One of the things they said is that of all the objects in the universe, the human brain is the most complex. There are as many neurons in the brain as there are stars in the Milky Way galaxy. That's a lot of neurons going on. The Bible also shows that man's creation was God's supreme act of physical creation. It's in Zechariah 12:1. God uses three aspects of his physical creation as an example of His creative powers and His sovereign authority over His creation. And this is the verse. This is the word of the Lord concerning Israel, the Lord who stretches out the heavens, who lays the foundations of the earth, and who forms the spirit of man within Him. So tonight I just wanted to share some interesting facts about God's creation, the things about the brain. We're just going to camp here just for a minute, because really and truly I want to get to the meat of the reason that you're here, and that's the activities for you to use in your during your Sunday school time or your worship time with the kids. So the brain is like a powerful computer that stores our memory and controls how we think and we react. The brain is the center of the nervous system, controlling all of our thoughts, all of our memories and decisions. The brain contains millions of nerve cells that send and receive information all over the body. It is very complex, and it's over three times as big as the brain of other mammals that are about the same size as us. And then the brain of an adult weighs approximately 3 pounds and makes up of about 2% of the body weight. So we are going to do a little exercise in a minute about the brain. So why don't you stand up, and we're going to do a little exercise. Okay, so let me put this here so you can hear me. And you see that I have spatial issues. Okay, so here we go. All right, so we're going to put our arms out like this, all right? And then you're going to kind of cross your thumbs, and then you're going to pull in your fingers, and then you're going to make your knuckles meet, and then you're going to pull your hands to your chest. And that's about the size of your brain. So your knuckles are right there. So look down there. That's about the size of your brain. And the researchers say it's really not the size of the brain that really matters. It's the amount of neural connections that matter. You want a lot of neural connections going on. And so another thing is, look at your thumbs. They should be crossed. One of the exciting things about the brain is that, and you know this probably, is that the right hemisphere of the brain controls the left side of the body, all the activities of the left side of the body. And then the left side of the brain controls the right side of the body. And so, you know, if people have difficulties, they have a stroke or they have some sort of traumatic brain injury, it depends on where that hit in the brain, depending on whether they lose speech or they lose movement or anything like that. Okay, so now let's just take our knuckles. We want our knuckles to still meet. And then let your fingers hang down like this. Okay, so what this is sort of the inner side of the brain, the deep, dark, emotional side of the brain, the limbic area. The limbic area of the brain is sort of the emotional center of the brain. And you'll notice that your fingers here kind of mirror one another. So in each hemisphere, there's duplicate there. There's two of those there. So what you have on the right, you have on the left as well. And then, let me look at my notes here. So as we have our limbic system there, our fingers hanging down there, the wrist sort of represent the brain stem. And this is where vital body functions happen, the heartbeat, the blood pressure. Now rotate your hands a little bit like this. So this sort of represents what's going on with the brain and the spinal cord. So you know how you're able just to move your head and that spinal cord is able to move as well. So that's just a little metaphor of the brain. And so hopefully with the movement and everything will help you to remember the different parts of the brain. You can sit down. Thank you. So there's one other piece of information, Alan, if you'll go to the next slide, is the reticular activating system, the RAS. How many of you know about that? Is there any medical, are there any medical folks in here? So I want a disclaimer. I don't know a lot about the brain. I just know what the research is saying and how it applies to learning. And so this is the brain's filtering system. And it's located inside the survival area of the brain. And that's where that fight or flight part is. And that pays attention to a lot of stimuli, but it also filters it out. Children who have attention deficit sometimes, their filter system isn't quite as efficient as some of the others. But they came that way. But what researchers are saying about children's brains today is that this is changing, more so than ours. And let me just read this to you. It's very interesting. So what they're saying is that there's been an overexposure. Our kids are overexposed to all of these messaging, all of these videos, the texting, all of that. So that stimuli, they're used to a lot of stimuli. And so it's overexposed. So it's changed compared to ours. And from our lifestyle determines which information comes in and which is not, does not enter. And this filtering system allows us to focus and keep our sanity. Otherwise, there'd just be too much information. And sometimes with children with ADHD type of things, they're focusing on too many things or one thing only. So students, however, lived in a world of constant messaging, says that their brains have changed more quickly than their teachers. So I am still of this age, and I am still teaching. I'm of this age, and I'm still teaching. So these kids, as you know, like I'm over this new phone, and they're like, don't you know that by now? And they're just like, click, 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 click. I mean, they know how to do that. But the message that's in the images and the messages that are coming in so quickly, and they scan quickly, and they then expect more information. So that has to do with us as teachers, how to keep their attention, how to keep them motivated, because they're used to a lot of constant information. Does that make sense? Okay. So when you get out of here, you're going to like, do you know about the RAS? And that's a reticular activating system, and we all have them. We all have them. All right, Alan, thank you. So tonight, we're going to talk about some brain strategies, and that's the reason that you're here. Did you know, this is just a little side note, that keeping a room temperature between 68 to 72 helps, it's better for learning? Because you think about being somewhere in a hot room, what happens? You want to fall asleep, right? here at FBA, I think it's below 68 most days. Maybe in church you might think that too. I think it's like a hospital keeping the germs down or something. But really and truly, keeping the temperature anywhere from 68 to 72 is optimal for learning to take place. Researcher Mary Lee Sparinger, she's a researcher out there, says that teachers who are new to brain-compatible teaching are often in awe of how the brain remembers and of how many different memory systems there are. Although many brain-compatible principles are followed instinctively, once teachers know how the principles work, they're more likely to use it. And that's what we're doing tonight. We want to be able to help them to learn in a better way and to remember, because our children are faced with a lot this day and time, aren't they? They're faced with a lot. I think there's always been the good and evil, but today it just seems like it's accelerated for some reason. So we want them to be able to remember God's word and apply it in their lives and use it when they need to. So, what can a teacher do? Well, using names. Use the children's names often. Now, I know sometimes there's those little wiggle worms and those active ones, and we may be seeing their names more than we want, but using them in a good way. For example, Beth, I really like the way I saw you helping so-and-so come in the door and get started today. Or Kevin. What you said last week about Jesus and his teaching of the disciples, do any of you remember what Kevin said? Because what is happening is that reticular activating system, hearing our names, helps us in survival. We learn that very early on, don't we? We have children, and what do? We call their name. My youngest son is Seth. Seth Edward Hughes, that he better stop doing whatever he was doing back then, because mom was trying to get his attention because hopefully he wasn't about to cross the street and a car was coming and those kinds of things. So using their name in a positive way will help get their attention. Provide novelty. Novelty is something that kind of hits an emotional piece of the heart and the brain. And so I'm going to demonstrate something novel in a minute. Perhaps it's a surprise visitor. Suppose it's a reward, a specific reward that might surprise them, or an activity that you're doing. But when you provide novelty, the brain remembers. And it activates that RAS. It activates the reticular activating system. Games are good as well. Humor is one thing. Do you know when you're sitting in Pastor Greg's or you're listening to other preachers, maybe on television or something like that, they usually begin with something humorous, a humorous story or a joke or something like that. Humor, we connect to humor. And did you know that understanding humor really is connected to higher level thinking and higher, because some people don't get it. And there's kids out there today that have, other difficulties, and they just, that figurative language is very hard for them. And so humor is very important, and not sarcasm, because sarcasm doesn't create a safe place for children. So no sarcasm. And joke telling is always fun, and maybe you even have you start with a joke and you say next week, Linda, I would love you to come back and give, make sure start the class with a joke, a knock-knock joke. You know how the little kids love those knock-knock jokes, and they nearly knock you out because they're just on and on. So anything like that, humor, laughter, joyfulness, they release brain chemicals that make us feel good. And so they also help us to remember. And humor provides more oxygen. And brain cells need oxygen and glucose in order for fuel. So laughter causes the endorphin surge, and you probably heard that before, and it moderates body functions. The Bible talks about laughter and joyfulness. Proverbs 17:22 talks about a joyful heart is good medicine. And in Psalm 126:2, it says, let our mouth be filled with laughter. And you know what else I heard, ladies and gentlemen? I also heard that the more you laugh, it burns calories. So I ought to be a beanpole right here because I love to laugh. But laughter is good. So have a lot of laughter in your time with your students. Another thing is promoting problem solving. Problem solving. Again, our kids need to be able to learn how to problem solve because of just wanting to become an adult. And there's going to be a lot of problems, you know, as they get to be older. And so problem solving is very important. One of the other things that it talks about is to help working memory. And so building working memory and, you know, memorizing Bible verses. But maybe they don't remember them verbatim, but at least remembering them and building that is a foundation for building higher level thinking skills. So that working memory is one of those things. Michelle McDonald is doing a session on storytelling, and it was interesting because storytelling seems to be a theme. Is it Pastor Young was talking about a little bit about storytelling, and I'm going to be doing some storytelling in a minute, but that is one of the all-time favorite brain activities. It reaches an emotional level oftentimes. Stories attract the emotional center of the brain. And so we're going to talk about storytelling in just a minute, even more so. Playing games. Do you play games? Do you play games with the students? The drill, that repetition, that's a little bit of a novelty, but learning can be fun. And so the games, well, sometimes they get a little competitive, don't they? And so you want to try to play it non-too competitively if you can, but they get very aggressive, don't they? And I get aggressive too. I'm like, I play games with the students that I work with here when we're reviewing things. And so playing games, so it's fun, but also learning. And then making connections. This is a big one. Making connections where, for example, they've learned something in the past and they've got new information. Connecting to the past helps them to remember more. For example, comparing and contrasting. Will you remember the story about baby Moses and how baby Moses was protected and sent down the river? And all of the things that baby Moses story. Well, now Moses has grown up, and he's leading the Israelites out of Egypt. And how do you think Moses compares to Abraham? Abraham was a leader. So those types of things promote learning, comparing, making connections, prior learning to new learning. And then allowing movement. And we're going to be doing a lot of movement in here this evening. So get ready. All right, we're going to go and I'll expound upon that. So here's the storytelling. The Bible is a huge storybook, isn't it? It has all kinds of stories. You know, Jesus was a storyteller. How many of you remember my mom and dad? My dad passed away last February. I remember as a little girl, he would tell me the story of walking to school a mile or two, you know, in the snow or whatever. He was raised in Arkansas. And I would be like, I don't want to listen to that story anymore. But then when he got older, they got more precious to me. So there's it hits that emotional area of the brain, and you remember those things. I remember a lot of what he told me because of the stories. So I'm going to read a story to you from the Bible, John 6, 1 through 14. And it's the story of Jesus feeding the 5,000 with how many loaves of bread? 5. And how many fish? 2. All right. So just relax as I'm reading the story. So Jesus crossed this far shore, the Sea of Galilee, and a great crowd of people appeared because they were following him because he had been doing miraculous signs. And so he went up to the mountainside and he sat down and he saw all these people. He looked and he saw the great crowd. He asked for Philip and he said, what do we have to feed them? And Philip says, we don't have anything to feed them. And Jesus asked, what would it cost? And he said, way much more than any of us have. It's just going to cost too much money. And so Simon Peter's brother, Andrew, spoke up and said, hey, there's a little guy out there and he's got 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. And Jesus said, tell him to bring that to me. And so Jesus prayed over the fish and the loaves of bread. And he had everybody sit down. And he He then distributed all of the food, and it was more than enough. He fed 5,000 people with just that little amount and gathered leftovers that filled 12 baskets. After the people saw the miraculous sign that Jesus did, they began to say, "Surely this is the prophet who has come into the world." Some of the questions you might ask a student after that that has some emotional appeal would be, why do you think it was important for Jesus to feed the 5,000 families? There was a need. And then you can expound upon Jesus meeting all of our needs, right? What do you think the little boy was feeling when he saw Jesus use his gift for the miracle? That he was what, Linda? That he was very special, and that he had given something to Jesus that helped Jesus to feed that many people. And what does this story tell you about whom Jesus really was? So he cares about our physical, doesn't he? He cares about our emotional, all those pieces he cares about. So those are some questions you could ask. I'll talk to you a little bit about stories. Next thing about this story, I just want to talk to you a little bit about stories. Alan, if you would change it. Stories are the emotional glue that connects the audience to the message. It's an important way to tap into the heart of the audience, providing a channel or a deeper message to be conveyed. And also, when we watch when the students watch, you know, they love superheroes, and so they always want to know, well, how did they begin, and what, you know, how did that happen, how did they become that, and the beginning, the middle, and the end. They want to know about all of that. And so people are defined by those origins, where they come from. They're curious. Curiosity is something that we want our students to develop, so they'll seek more knowledge. And, you know, for years, people have been those isolated communities that are in the jungles or in many different places. They've been, and even those that maybe even are Native American people, they've been passing down their culture and their ways of living through stories. So storytelling is very, very powerful. It says that new research shows that 70% of what we learn is consumed through storytelling. That is a lot. 70%. That's a big number. And so when you know your audience, when you know their experiences, their frustration, their pains, a story is a way of getting their attention. Maybe there's something that you need to change in the behavior. Maybe there's something about their heart. We all need a change of heart, don't we? But storytelling is a way of touching their heart and touching their mind and creating a change there. Stories motivate an audience toward learning a goal. I've had the privilege of going to some of the teacher conventions, and I went into, she was an author, and she was also a reading specialist, and she had this huge room of teachers, principals, and other administrators in there, and she told us to just listen while she read us a book. And it was a story about a teacher who had helped a little girl who was struggling. The name of the book is Thank You, Mr. Faulkner. I don't know if you've read it or not. All of us grown-ups were tears in our eyes at the end of it. It touched us emotionally. And I remember what it looked like outside. It was in Dallas, Texas. It was amazing. And so stories touch that emotional piece of, and they inspire us. That was to inspire us to go on and be better teachers. Have you ever noticed, have you ever gone to New York or some of those cities that, you know, there's storytellers on the street, or some of those craft fairs, there's a storyteller. People like to sit and they like to listen to them. It draws people in. And even now on Facebook and some of the social media, they always like to tell stories, don't they? at my dad's funeral, one of the things that we did just to, you know, just not only to celebrate his life, was to tell stories about Dad and the stories that he liked to tell. So stories are huge, and they are more than likely to make people care. So we're talking about storytelling, which is very important about brain-based learning, but also movement. So we're going to do storytelling and movement, and we're going to put those two things together, and you're going to do an activity. So let's move on to movement. Now, I know movement has its place in the Sunday school classroom, and maybe in the worship they get to move a little bit more. And so we want to provide a structured movement, right? More than anything when we are working with our kids in the Sunday school. So exercise has a physiological and a developmental impact on children's brains, and they need to be moving a lot in school. It increases oxygen to the brain that may enhance its ability to learn. John Rady, the author of A User's Guide to the Brain, calls exercise miracle grow for the brain. It says because of its role in stimulating new growth factors. So movement is very important. It helps them to, it improves their memory, concentration, and gives them a positive outlook. You know, when you've been sitting too long, maybe at a seminar or a workshop or church and everything, you need to get up, and you know the choir director and the pastors will have you stand and all of that. But anyway, that movement's very important. So right now, we're going to get up, and I'm going to have you stand. And Alan, if you would move to the next slide, we're going to do movement with storytelling. So you're going to do the motions to this activity, and it has to do with the story that we just talked about. So I will read the first part, and while I'm reading it, you do the activity. So here we go. One day, a large crowd gathered to hear Jesus teach. It was getting late, and this large crowd was getting hungry. Jesus said, you can say it with me, feed them. The disciples said there was not enough food, and they shook their head, right? A small boy had 5 loaves and 2 fishes. Jesus prayed for the food and distributed it to all the people. They were all full, and there were 12 baskets left over. The crowd knew they had seen a miracle. All right, so little movement with storytelling. You think next week when they come in, they would remember that. Another thing you could do is to repeat it, get somebody up to lead it, all of those kinds of things. But that's going to help them to remember the story and the miracle of Jesus providing food and feeding the 5,000. And so, repeat, connect, and have fun. Repetition is the mother of all learning. How many of you remember repeating your math facts? Did you do a go around the world and 3 times 3 is 3 times 4 is, and you know, yeah, right. So repetition, it's good. It's good for learning, and it helps to them to connect. In ancient Greece, Aristotle commented on the role of repetition in learning, and he said, it is frequent repetition that produces a natural tendency. So the more we learn Bible verses, the more we're going to be able to say them, to pull them up, to use them in our life. Next week, so we did that this week. Next week you could say, let's see if you remember. Let's do it without any kind of instructions on the PowerPoint. See if they remember it. But also I have another activity that might be, it's really repeating the story just in the beginning of your Sunday school class or worship. Let's see how much you remember about Jesus, the 5,000. So what I want you to do is I have about 6 sentences here. And when you hear something that was in the story from Jesus feeding the 5,000, I want you to stand. And if it wasn't in there, I want you to sit with your hands crossed and your arms crossed across you, okay? Are you ready? You ready? Jesus turned regular water into wine to save a wedding party. Jesus told his disciples to feed the 5,000 families. A young boy offered to share his 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. Satan tried to get Jesus to turn stones into bread. God sent down manna falling from the sky to feed the Israelites. Jesus told the disciples to pick up all the leftover bread. What good memories y'all have. That's very good. All right, give yourself a hand. Awesome. Awesome. One of the things I loved as I was getting this information was, you can change it, Alan, was that little is much when Jesus is in it. Little is much when Jesus is in it. So we're to relax, aren't we? All right. So let's go to the problem solving. Talked about us as Christians need to be good problem solvers. And so one of the things that I'm going to ask you to do now is you're going to, you have 2 groups here. So with your 2 groups, would you like to do 2 groups or would you like 1 group? It's up to you at this point. 2 groups? Okay, one. Okay, one. One. Okay, we have a spokesman here. We want to have one. All right, so what I want you to do, and Alan, if you would go to the next slide. So what I want you to do is I'm going to give you something here. And what I'd like for you to, I'm going to have you to problem solve. So hold on 1 minute. Let me give you this.
Now, I've tried to keep this very covered up because it's smelly. Because it resembles the 2 fish. It's tuna. You don't have to take it out. I just want you to resemble. I mean, it just resembles that. The answer to that. And then I'm going to give you 5 words. Now, what I want you to do is I want you to problem solve. I want you to problem solve. Think about the people that were in the audience when right before our meeting. Okay, so if you listen to how much you have, and how are you going to feed all the people that were in the audience tonight? This is what you have, and I want you to think about it for a minute, reflect upon it, and figure out how you can solve the problem. And then in just a minute, I'm going to give you a poster board. And so I want you to problem solve. What could you do to problem solve to feed those people? And then we're going to do a poster, and you're going to have the what. And you're going to state the problem,
the situation, and or how the problem situation. Right now, you're kind of feeling something. You're thinking about how in the world is that little bit going to feed those group of people down there. And then you're going to put something under the so what, and how did you solve the problem? And then the 3rd column will be now what, the outcome and application to your life or to people's life. So after you solve the problem, what did you learn from that, and how would you solve it next time? So let me give you this. Do we have any chefs in the group? Somebody could write the what, the so what, and the now what. So you can use your imagination as well. This is just a problem solving. Who wants to write that? Who wants to write the what? There's the markers right there. I like lefties. All right, so you ladies talk while Kevin's doing that. Yeah, you're thinking like kids. You're thinking like kids. Yeah. Yeah. What would they be doing? So, yeah, absolutely.
So we're gonna put up a 1,000 little pieces.
They might have a little.
So we have a bowl. maybe 5 loaves will come again tomorrow, and so maybe half the group eats today and half the group eats tomorrow.
That's a good that's a good way. Uh-huh. Yeah. That's good. Okay. Okay. Thank you. All right. No. He's talking to me about my time. So y'all are on the right track because you are doing a lot of problem solving right now. Like, is there a right answer? Like, that's what we always want to, especially adult learners. What's the right answer? And the kids too. So what you're doing is exactly what I want you to. There's really no right answer. It's just to problem solve. Now what? How did this problem make you feel though? How did it make you feel? Helpless, very helpless. But what would be an application to your life? How would you apply this problem-solving situation to your life? Okay. That's right. The problems are just too big sometimes, aren't they? But another thing is that working with other people, helping, you know, because you were just bouncing off different ideas. I love, like, so half the people get to eat today, maybe more tomorrow, gluten-free children, all of those pieces. And so that is a skill. That is a skill. And so critical thinking skills. And we want our kids to be critical thinkers, don't we, as they go out there and they're living for the Lord. That's what we want. Well, y'all did a great job with that. One of the things that I had written was what was not enough food for however many people. And so what? Well, we had to work together. We had to plan. We had to divide. And now what? What did that mean? Well, everyone got some food. That's basically what you were saying. And we would plan better next week if the situation came up, right? We would do a better job of planning. Okay, let's play another game. Okay, and one of the things that I wanted to do that was going to be novel and I forgot to do when I was reading you the story of Jesus and the feeding the 5,000 was I was going to be like, are y'all hungry? Mm-hmm. And I was going to eat in front of you. And so that's kind of mean. That's probably not anything you would do. But sort of a novel, something that's novel where you're just kind of eating, like, that's really good. And see if that, you know, how do you think they felt if not everyone got to eat? Just one person got to eat, like me up here just eating. If Jesus had only let a few eat, but he fed everyone, just like he takes care of all of us. So here's another game, and go ahead, Alan, and it's the picnic game. Have you ever played, and you're starting with, okay, so you're spelling picnic, P-I-C-N-I-C, and you're starting with, I'm going to picnic, I'm going to take pickles, okay? So you say, I'm going on a picnic, I'm going to take pickles, and now something with an I. Okay, Linda? Good, healthy. Oh, yum. Okay, we had to have something in. Hey, Kevin. Lettuce. It has to be I. Ice cream's good. Yeah. Okay. Very good. Very good. And for the little ones who might not know their letters yet, then you give them a letter. You show them the letter and you say it's going to start with this and all of that. So that's just a good way of kind of closing up the, you know, the story of the 5,000. Anything about food is good. But games, of course, are fun. They love it. They learn from it. Just a good brain-based learning type of strategy. All right. And just a reminder, go ahead, Alan, thank you, is Gardner's Seven Intelligences. When you are working with the kids, and this is just a different way of talking about the different learning styles. This goes into it a little more in depth. But verbal linguistic, you know, you have an interview. And so after you've read the story, you have someone being one of the folks that was maybe the last to be served. What were you feeling? What were you feeling, you know, since you're the last one in line to be fed that day with all of those 5,000 there? So those kinds of things, puppet shows, kiddos that are logical, mathematical, figuring out solutions like we just did, graphic organizers, visual spatial kiddos that have that intelligence, like to illustrate. They illustrate maps, pictures. Of course, we know our kiddos that have the gift of, you know, kinesthetic. They're a kinesthetic learner. It's movement, manipulating objects, musical, rhythmic, tap a beat, create songs. Interpersonal students, they love group projects. They love working with other people. They're the social guys. And then the intrapersonal, they're very introspective. And so they need some time to think about it. If you ask a question, be able to journal about it and maybe bring it back to you the next week. So we are almost done. Any questions or any other ideas, any difficulties that you're having in the time in your Sunday school class? It is classroom management, yes. And what grade? What grade do you have? First grade. Yeah, yeah. Oh, you're in the school. You're in the school. Yeah. Yeah, that is. Yeah. Yes. Yes. It is. It is. Yeah, those are really hard. Yeah. Well, I know saying their name, and I know having them just, you know, with that attention span, they have about probably however old they are, that's about their attention span. About 6 minutes, 7 minutes, you know, is their attention span. So keeping them as active, one of the things is to say, I have a challenge for you today, and I know you can do it. So you have to listen, and getting them engaged and getting them with the goal-minded, those kinds of things. Last year, I did it on discipline, by the way, so I could maybe give you that tape. Ask him, Shelby. Okay, so who can tell me, without looking at your notes, some of the brain-based learning strategies that we talked about tonight? All right. Storytelling, can you name another one? There's about eight that we talked about.
Storytelling, game, movement,
problem solving. Good. Yeah. That's okay. Good. All right. So I think she raised her hand first, so you win the gift certificate. Yeah. Is that in the package back there? It's right there. Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Reagan, so much. I appreciate that. No. Well, yeah. Alan is my timekeeper, and so we're out of time. They want you to have a break. Hopefully we'll